Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.
From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
This week on Register Radio, Tim Drake talks with Philadelphia's Archbishop Charles Chaput, just back from Rome, about his new e-book, A Heart on Fire, and about the challenges facing the Church in America. Also in our second half, Dan Burke is here. He'll be talking with Register's Rome correspondent Edward Penton about some of those recent appointments at the Vatican and the efforts to reconcile with the Society of St. Pius X. Welcome again to Register Radio. It's a co-production of EWTN and the National Catholic Register. I'm Tom Price, along with Tim Drake, senior writer for the Register. Hello, Tim.
Hello, Tom. It's great to be with you.
And with you, my friend. Also with Dan Burke, executive director for the Register.
It's great to be with you, Tom.
Hey, let's begin with Tim this time. You know, this is our first show since the Fortnight for Freedom, and what better guest to have with us today than Archbishop Chaput? He gave that wonderful homily at the Fortnight's closing mass on the 4th of July, Tim.
That's right, Tom. And installed as Archbishop of Philadelphia in September of last year, Archbishop Chaput is one of the Church's great shepherds and teachers. A professed Capuchin, Archbishop Chaput previously served as Archbishop of Denver and Bishop of Rapid City. He's authored the book Render Unto Caesar and the recent e-book A Heart on Fire, Catholic Witness in the Next America. He has just returned from Rome, where he received the pallium from Pope Benedict XVI, and on July 4th he delivered the homily at the closing mass of the Fortnight for Freedom. Your Excellency, thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to be with us on Register Radio.
Thank you, Tim. I'm very happy to do this because I'm a great fan of the Register, and I think it's wonderful that EWTN and the Register have come together as they have. I'm sure that'll serve the Church in an extraordinarily generous and good way.
Yes, and we have you to thank for that as well.
Well, I was a little bit of it, but not a whole lot.
You were recently in Rome and received the pallium. While back at home here, the Supreme Court was deciding about the Affordable Health Care Act and had decided that it was constitutional. And so I was wondering, first of all, what was your initial reaction to the news regarding the Supreme Court's decision?
I think the initial reaction that I experienced and saw the same reaction among those I was with was surprise, because everyone had thought that it wouldn't pass the scrutiny of the Supreme Court. But once that decision was made, I also saw an ongoing, maybe a re-energized resolve to do all we can to make sure that our religious freedom is protected even within the Act, and we're still committed, as we have been, without compromise to overturn those mandates of the Health and Human Services Agency. So I saw a disappointment, but then a recommitment to do all we can to protect our religious freedom.
Sure. And speaking of freedom, of course, the Fortnight for Freedom has just ended. Of course, the prayers and the battle continue. But there are those, particularly in the media, who have suggested that the Church's involvement in the Fortnight and that the fight against the HHS contraceptive mandate is somehow partisan. How do you respond to that?
Well, first of all, I respond by saying that the Catholic Church has, the bishops of the Catholic Church have had a clear record for generations, or actually decades, of supporting the concept that health care should be available to everyone because it's an issue of human dignity. So we are in favor of health care. How it's delivered, of course, there can be many ways it can be delivered competently and within the principles of the Catholic Church, but we really do believe in it. And secondly, I say that, you know, we didn't pick this fight. We're actually quite surprised that the fight is taking place during an election year, because it seemed like it would be to everybody's benefit that that wouldn't be the case. But the fact that these things have developed in the election year shouldn't take away our commitment to very clearly stand in favor of religious liberty and the Church's right to follow its teachings without the interference of the government.
It seems that when it comes to the word of freedom and what freedom means, that we have a rather mistaken notion, I think, especially in our country, and maybe we could even argue in some ways a somewhat Protestant notion. And to many, it seems that freedom means license. But that's not really what we're talking about when we talk about freedom, is it?
No, St. Augustine made a wonderful distinction, you know, back in the 5th century, that arbitrary freedom is a freedom to do what you want, when you want to, and how you want to. But true freedom is the ability to do what's good even when you personally struggle to do what's evil. So it's really freedom from ourselves, freedom to love God and to love our neighbor without the selfishness of the human heart getting in the way of those loves. So I think it's really important for us to understand that even religious freedom is a means to an end, and the end, of course, is true freedom of sons and daughters of God, which is the freedom to follow God's will in everything we do. But we won't be able to do that if we don't have the means of religious freedom to be able to act personally, but also corporately and publicly on these matters in our country.
Sure. I want to remind listeners that I'm Tim Drake, and you are listening to Register Radio, and we are speaking with Philadelphia Archbishop Charles Chaput about the challenges facing our nation. In your recent ebook, A Heart on Fire, Catholic Witness and the Next America, you kind of make the case that America is fast becoming missionary territory again. And I'm wondering, we really seem to need sort of a new apologetics to go about re-evangelizing the continent, don't we?
We certainly do. I think the most important thing for us to do right now, though, is to understand how our country is changing and not to be lulled into complacency. Take for granted, for example, that we're always going to have religious freedom. Because, you know, I'm 67 years old, and I look at our country now and see how different it is from what it was when I was a young boy, and how different it is even now, even than it was 10 years ago. I mean, who would have guessed 10 years ago that so many states will have already approved the changing of the meaning of marriage? If I had said that would happen 10 years ago, people would have laughed at me because it didn't seem possible. So things were changing very quickly. And, you know, the title of my new book, or that small little booklet, A Heart on Fire, Catholic Witness and the Next America, in some ways I think the focus should be on the next America. How are we going to stand up for what the gospel asks us to stand for in the changing culture that we find ourselves in? And what can we do to influence this culture? And as you say, that requires a kind of new apologetics, which is to, you know, apologetics is the ability to articulate the faith in a convincing way in various cultures.
You know, in the recent book Bad Religion by Ross Douthat, argues that
like
we are
much.
Yeah, it is. That we ourselves, that the laity, the clergy, religious, and even bishops are to blame because we've watered down our message to make it somewhat more palatable, and that by doing so we're largely indistinguishable from the prevailing culture. And I'm just wondering if you would agree with that.
I do, and I think that you know, I grew up as the Vatican Council was being held, and the immediate period after the Vatican Council, one of the main themes that we took away from the Council in this country was an openness to the world around us. I think it's a very important theme because God asks us to love the world, but we're not supposed to be of it. We're just in it. And the trouble, I think, is that many of us became of the world as well as in the world, and that meant that we are hardly distinguishable from those who aren't believers. And I think there was a tendency on the part of American Catholics to want to fit in to a largely Protestant culture in the United States, and we've done that very well. You know, I think five of the Supreme Court justices now are Catholics. You know, back in, you know, 100 years ago, there would be worried that anyone, even one, would be a Catholic, you know, that it would be possible. So, and I think the reason why we have five is people don't worry about the issue anymore, whether or not Catholics would make a difference, and that's really unfortunate, because we should make a difference, because Jesus Christ makes a difference, and we are his disciples, and we should be living in a way that is convicting in the world around us.
And getting to that, living a life of conviction, how do you see the catechism of the church overcoming the catechism of the culture? I mean, as a parent, I really see how the catechism of the culture, and I use that, you know, in a different way, but the way that is so overpowering for people, and especially our children. So how does the catechism of the church overcome that?
I think it's a great image. I think I think that we are catechized by television, by radio, by newspapers, by movies, by our friends, by the culture around us. And I think it's important for Catholics, if they want to be faithful within that culture, to be formed by the catechism of the Catholic Church. And that was a great gift from the time of Pope John Paul II. So I hope that, you know, parents, pastors and parishes, a small group of Catholics who are in a discussion group or whatever, will in a consistent kind of way use the catechism to form our way of thinking and responding to the world around us. It is a wonderful gift to the church of our time that isn't used very much. I think people buy it, put it on their shelves, and don't allow themselves to grow in wisdom and knowledge by making it a real part of their lives.
Sure. You know, and Christ did leave us this promise that he would be with the church and protect her, you know, until the end. But we do not have a similar promise with our own nation. There are no guarantees that the American experiment is going to ultimately succeed. And I'm just wondering if you feel that by living saintly lives and being saintly witnesses, which is really what you're calling us to, do you think that can help our nation?
I think the way we become good citizens is by becoming good Catholics. You know, being faithful Christians makes us the best kind of citizens because we are become virtuous and because we're interested in good of others more than we are in our own good. You know, we're not self-centered, but we're self-giving in a sacrificial kind of way as Jesus was. You know, and we're committed to God's plan for the world rather than our own plans. And all that makes us better citizens and better fellow travelers with our fellow citizens. So I think that we have a lot to give, and if we don't give it, our country really will be undermined by our lack of virtue. And you're right. You know, there's no promise that the American experiment is going to continue forever. I think it's been an extraordinarily wonderful experiment. I think it's been, in recent years up to now, it's been friendly towards the church. You know, in the beginning, there was a lot of anti-Catholic bigotry, but recently it's been friendly to the church. I think it's certainly compatible with our Catholic faith. But you know, the danger is we'll become more Americans than we are Catholics, and that's not a good thing.
Yeah. And I want you to just let readers know a little bit about how they can get a hold of A Heart on Fire. I understand it is also going to be in the reissue of Render Unto Caesar. Is that right?
That's right. You know, some of my friends who are my age don't know how to use e-books and don't know how to find them. They don't have an iPad or they don't have a Kindle. And they say, how do I get it? And it is hard to get unless you have some sense of technology. But for those who don't want to use the new technologies to download that, in the middle of August, there's going to be a reissuing of Render Unto Caesar, the book that I wrote 4 years ago. And I originally wrote this e-book as a foreword to the new reissuing, and the publishers, Doubleday, liked it so much that they decided to issue it separately as an e-book. But it'll be available in ordinary book form from the middle of August on.
Your Excellency, Tom Price here. You know, I find it very interesting that you come out with an e-book and Cardinal Dolan both come out with an e-book. And, you know, two of the leaders of the church embracing this new technology, I think, is fantastic.
Well, it is. And, you know, I have to give credit to my own staff for helping me through those kind of things because I'm not particularly savvy about the new technologies. But also my publishing company, Doubleday, has really been very helpful, and I'm grateful to them for that.
Well, on behalf of Tim and Dan, I certainly want to thank you so much for your time today, Your Excellency. Could we ask for your blessing, please?
You certainly can. You're doing great things. Well, God bless you and all the listeners. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May he show his face to you and have mercy on you. May he turn his countenance to you and give you peace. May Almighty God bless you, the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Archbishop Charles Chaput. We really appreciate your spending some time with us today.
Thank you.
When we return, we'll talk about recent appointments in the Vatican and the Pius X Society with the Register's Rome correspondent, Edward Penton. This is Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Stay with us.
Hello, I'm Michael Warsaw, Chief Executive of EWTN and publisher of the National Catholic Register. We're in a time in history like no other, and our fight for religious freedom and the need for the new evangelization, it's essential to stay connected via the faithful Catholic content delivered by the Register. We've finally been able to help realize Mother Angelica's dream. She always wanted a newspaper as part of EWTN's media apostolate. Why? Because there's an important catechetical opportunity at the intersection of faith and culture. Since the 1920s, the Register has been advancing the truth of the Magisterium. This valuable resource will help you to better understand the faith and deepen your relationship with our Lord. Join the growing ranks of Register subscribers today and access the one source of leading voices and opinions concerning the issues that matter most to you.
To start your subscription to the National Catholic Register today, go to EWTN.com and click on the banner for the Register or call 800-854-6316. That's EWTN.com and click on the Register subscription banner or call 800-854-6316.
let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back to Register Radio, along with Tim Drake and Dan Burke. I'm Tom Price. And Dan, the saga of the Society of St. Pius X has unfolded for many years now, a number of starts and stops. I got to ask you, are we nearing the finish line?
It depends on who you ask, Tom.
Oh, boy.
I think that some are optimistic. Certainly the Pope, as the great unifier that he is, it seems, in his heart, in the way that he's exercising his pontificate, is such that his desire is to bring as many back into the fold as he can. The reconciliation of the Anglicans has been beautiful.
I'm optimistic. I know a number of people who have returned to the church, and these are good people.
Yeah.
Good people.
Yeah.
So.
There's a lot of reason for optimism. Today we have with us Edward Penton, who's a Register's Rome correspondent, long time. Welcome to the show, Edward.
Hi. Good to be with you.
Well, Edward, I think you can give us a little bit of insight, or a lot of insight, into what's been going on with the Society of St. Pius X and the effort of reconciliation. There's been a recent appointment of a new head of Ecclesia Dei. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. Yes, the Holy Father has appointed Archbishop Augustin de Noia, who's a Dominican, as Vice President of Ecclesia Dei, the Pontifical Commission for Ecclesia Dei, which is in charge of trying to help bring reconciliation with the Pius X Society. Archbishop Benoia comes from, as far as the Vatican is concerned, he spent quite a few years as Undersecretary of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, working very closely with then Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger. And then in 2009, he became Secretary of the Congregation for Divine Worship. So both of those fields are very much in tune, really, with his current role now as Vice President of Ecclesia Dei. He's got to find a way of helping to bring back the society into full communion with Rome. It'll be a difficult task, but many people have expressed a lot of hopes in Archbishop Augustin de Noia, because of his great depth of theological knowledge and his expertise and his closeness and faithfulness and loyalty to the Holy Father. And so there's a lot of hope in this appointment that he can perhaps really get the talks into reaching a positive conclusion.
Edward, wasn't he also key in helping bring about the Anglican Ordinariate, or at least wasn't he a key player involved with some of the reconciliation efforts there?
Yes, he was, and there was some speculation that that's possibly why he was brought in. He said, I interviewed him last week, and he said that he thinks he has, perhaps sort of half jokingly, that he has a gift for reconciling groups from outside the church, and so that may be part of it. But he's not a canon lawyer, so he wasn't responsible for setting up the canonical structure of the Ordinariate. So that's not why he's been brought in, it seems, but simply because he is a very conciliatory man, and he's got the gifts, really, to bring reconciliation, many believe.
Edward, you recently wrote you facilitated a great interview with Archbishop de Noia in the National Catholic Register. That could be found at ncregister.com, and it's quite an in-depth interview about this entire effort, so I recommend that our listeners go check that out. With respect to the reconciliation, Edward, what do you think are the key issues that are hindering that process right now?
Well, it appears to be the same as it's always been, which is must the society adhere to all of the teachings of the Second Vatican Council? And that is a point of contention, of course. Archbishop de Noia tried to make the point that, yes, the council is dogmatic. There are it is a lot in there to do with the ordinary and extraordinary magisterium, as he calls it, and as is known. And so the ball is very much in the society's court now to try and find a way to reconcile. The Pius X Society has said from the beginning that this initiative has been started by the Pope, and that they've been asked by the Holy Father to come into communion. It's not something that they've done. So I suppose what's really needed now is patience on the Vatican side to try and see if they will come round to reconciling. At the moment, it's not so positive. There have been reports this week that the talks are now at a standstill because of alleged changes to the doctrinal preamble, which is the document that's the basis of reconciliation. The society is saying that there have been changes, possibly not done by the Pope, but which are now not not acceptable to the society. And so there's sort of talk that they're back to square one, essentially. Having had a lot of optimism a couple of weeks ago, it's now looking rather less optimistic and positive, but time will tell, I suppose.
This is Dan Burke with Register Radio, and we're talking with the Register's Rome correspondent, Edward Pinton, about the Holy Father's efforts to restore the schism between the Society of St. Pius X and the Church, and also we'll cover recent appointments at the Vatican that are important to the Church. Edward, it seems to me, after looking at reading your piece, your interview with Archbishop Denoia, that if there's anybody who can pull this off, who understands the concerns of the Society, as well as the hermeneutic of continuity that the Holy Father has encouraged as a way that we look at and interpret the Council, it seems that if there is any hope, certainly he's the one to really usher something in that really makes sense for all of us, really.
Yes, and there is the point, of course, that as these alleged rumors of going around, that the doctrinal preamble was changed without the Holy Father's authorization. I mean, I don't know if that's true, but if that is true, then you have someone in Archbishop Denoia who is totally faithful to the Holy Father and will make sure that if that did happen, that it won't happen again. So there is someone well trusted by the Pope now in this, and so that augurs hope as well.
Yeah, I certainly hold out hope and prayer for reconciliation. Edward, with respect to news coming out of Rome, you've peppered us with a number of blog posts recently, giving us updates about new appointments. There have been some very important appointments, including for the head of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. Can you give us a rundown of what's going on?
Sure, yes. He has been appointed, he's a friend of the Holy Father's. He goes back a long way. He comes from the Diocese of Regensburg, which, of course, is well known to the Holy Father.
And this is Bishop Mueller, right?
For 9 years. This is, yes, Bishop Gerhard Mueller, who's a professor of dogmatic theology. He's got a good reputation of being faithful to the Church's teaching, but there are question marks over certain pronouncements he's made, namely on the virgin birth and the Eucharist, which, taken alone, are quite alarming if you read them, but what other people are saying, including Monsignor Books, who's a consultant to the Vatican and a very well-respected theologian, he says, well, you mustn't take these comments out of context. If you read them in context, you'll understand where he's coming from. And so that's perhaps not something to be too concerned about. Also, in his position as prefect of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, his main role is to defend Orthodoxy, which is obviously well established, and then follow the instructions of the Holy Father. So he's not going to be his own man, as it were. He will be very much fulfilling his role as prefect, which is exactly that, just defending Orthodoxy.
This is Dan Burke with Register Radio, and we're here with Edward Pinton, now talking about the recent appointments in the Vatican. Edward, what else is going on? Are there other appointments? There's been a few other Germans that are helping out with the Holy See, and a number of Americans. What are the most interesting appointments there?
Yes, well, the other big appointment, of course, was the President of Pontifical Council for the Family. He's Archbishop Paglia, who's well-known here as one of the co-founders of the Santo Didio Bay community. So that was another major appointment. There was also the Secretary of the Congregation for Divine Worship, who replaces Archbishop Denoyer. He's Bishop Arthur from Leeds in England. So that's another major appointment. And then, of course, about a week before these appointments, we had a new communications advisor be appointed here at the Vatican, Greg Burke of Fox News, formerly a Fox News correspondent here in Rome. And he's being brought in to try and streamline and to make more efficient the PR aspect of the Vatican, which, as you probably know, as listeners probably know, has been a bit
challenging.
Questionable.
Yeah.
So he's been brought in to try and help improve the communications within the Vatican, at any rate, and start up, create a better strategy of communications. There has been a problem between certain communications between the Secretariat of State, which is the sort of executive branch of the Vatican, and the press office. And Greg Burke's role will be mainly to try and make sure that communication, that nexus of communication, is properly is made much more efficient. And he doesn't intend to come in and make huge changes, but what he wants to do is to try and have a seat at the table of those who are making decisions, and to try and have some input into whether it's a good decision or a bad decision to come out with a certain statement or and so forth. So his help will probably be quite, or at least many people hope, will be very effective, and especially with the English language media, who find this quite frustrating, really, the way that the communications have been carried out so far.
Edward, I don't know what time it is in Rome, but we're grateful for you. I'm sure it's on the edge of the wee hours one way or the other, but we're grateful for you joining us here on Register Radio and for keeping us up to date on all that's happening in the Vatican through your blog posts and writing for the National Catholic Register. Thanks for being with us.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
My thanks as well, Edward. And, you know, Dan, it really is a blessing to have people like Edward right there on the ground in Rome. Also, our own Rome Bureau Chief, Joan Lewis, for EWTN.
Yeah, it's great.
Getting it all done. Well, thank you so much for joining us this time on Register Radio. For producer Elena Rodriguez, Tim Drake, Dan Burke, all of us at the Register and here at EWTN, I'm Tom Price. See you next week.
For more information about the National Catholic Register and about Register Radio, go to ncregister.com. Podcasts of Register Radio are posted on ncregister.com and on ewtn.com. Join us next week at this time for Register Radio on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Register Radio is sponsored by Ignatius Press, the premier publisher of outstanding Catholic books, magazines, videos, and music, faithful to the magisterium of the Church. On the web at ignatius.com.